across the galaxy. This is where conspiracy on the wild side meets the perspective of a lifetime. This is the Free Zone with your host, Freeman.
Hello and welcome to the Free Zone. Well, guys, we're here. We're in it. This is the middle of the New World Order. This is how it all looks at the beginning. This is everything everyone has been talking about and trying to awaken the world to. We are living through it. It's going to be amazing. It's going to be scary. But I think in the end, we are going to be triumphant. I think this is a huge step for mankind as we start to awaken. Oh my God, if you guys realize how little was known just two decades ago, when we had to use books and library sharing and things of this nature to get our information. We had to find people like the Birch Society. We had to find different estranged authors that were giving us details on everything. Consider what it was like. A lot of you don't remember what it was like when no one knew anything. Now, with the World Wide Web and all the information being pounded out to people, you can't even imagine the change that has occurred. You don't know. You only have been here since the World Wide Web has been around and giving this information. You started to wake up once you realized inside of here. And I tell you guys, it has made a difference. You are making a difference. Just sitting here learning is making a difference. And we really have shifted the world in crazy ways, but we have a long road to go as this really unfolds before us now. So it's been a couple of years, but we've got Wayne McCroy back on the show, and he's an author of a number of books, The Autism Academic, which transhuman is, sorry, tongue twister there, The Autism Epidemic, Transhumanism's Dirty Little Secret, and The Alchemical Tech Revolution, Fulfilling Ancient Esoteric Agendas Through the Use of High Technology. You know, that's one of my favorite topics. And now Wayne has come out with The Demic of Pan, because as you start to see the true signs and symbols around you, which we are now awakened to, which I was referring to 20 years ago, no one saw anything. Now, I mean, if we look at Corona, Delta, Omicron, right? These viruses that are come to give us our green pass and our you know, digital ID. The pandemic laying out all of the rules for the New World Order. Check out Corona, Delta, Omicron, and think about it. The Corona, the rays of the sun. That's the circle around the eye in the pyramid. Delta, well, it's a triangle, folks. It's the pyramid inside of the eye of the pyramid. And Omicron, which is the O, which puts the I right there in the middle of the symbol. Corona, Delta, Omicron is the eye in the pyramid, folks. It's right in front of our faces as they try to throw all of this at us, because this is an occult order that is bringing about a transhumanist agenda. And there's no one better to talk about this than Wayne McCroy. So, Wayne, welcome to the Free Zone.
Hey, Freeman, thanks for having me back on again, man. It's been a long time since we've talked. And
yeah, it was like pre.
Sorry. Yeah, it was before all the nonsense has broken out in the world. But yeah, I mean, it's important that we got back in touch here again and, you know, are able to talk about this, because look at what has happened in this world in the past 2 years here. Look at the ways that it's changed. If you would have approached any of us about 3 years ago and said, hey, you know what, come 2022, this is the way it's going to be. We would all think, no way. I mean, even guys like us that have been researching this stuff for a long time, we wouldn't think that it would have rolled out as quickly as it has. But man, they were going for broke with this whole Corona thing. So like you were talking about the symbolism and stuff there, it's important to understand and break that down, because this is one of the tools that they use in order to influence the public mindset on things. They use these archetypal ideas, these symbols, mythologies, things like that, to affect the human mind in ways that we could barely conceive of. And this all ties back to many occultic principles that go back to what you would call the alchemical sciences or the natural sciences. So basically in my newest book, I just laid down, it's called The Demic of Pan, Breaking the Natural Order. I lay down the groundwork for what exactly they've done, how they've utilized these different archetypes to affect our minds and make real changes within the world around us to bring about the agenda that they're looking for here, which is the transhumanist control grid of sorts that they want to set up. And it's all based on biometrics, and it's all based on genetic codes and stuff like that. They want to have all your genetic information in a central database, and they really very much intend to tie all of your data to this biometric database. So your very identity itself will be tied together with all the different aspects of your person, right down to your bank account and you know, your biometric information, your genetic ID, all your medical ailments, anything you have along with that. It'll be this medical database that will be tied together with the financial markets. And also an important aspect of this is the social credit score, which they also will tie to this central utility. And it'll all be tied directly to your biometric ID. So this is an important thing, which will probably eventually equate to some type of an implant within your body, or some type of a situation where it's tied biometrically to your person, to your actual physical person, for identity purposes. So that's what the whole plan is here by this new world order, of course, that we've been talking about from time immemorial here. So that's centrally what's going on. And this is the rollout of the reasoning for doing so, right? This is what they've used. They've taken this whole idea and they've used it as an excuse to try to implement this control grid of sorts, right? This biometric ID utility, which will be based upon blockchain technology, and it all centralized in a central resource. So that, you know, if you're not a good little boy or girl, and don't follow all their rules or their community guidelines, as it were, they could shut you off at any time they want and lock you out of society so you can't participate. That's the whole point of the social credit score aspect of this. And that will be intrinsically tied to your person at some point. And we see these things right now being normalized, right? We're being conditioned to this. And they use this whole coronavirus outbreak situation to roll that whole thing out and implement it. And I would say much of it's based on fraud. And that's the bottom line here. And that's the important point, because they've used this fraud to actually manufacture something real in the real world with this whole idea. And they used some very specific archetypes to leverage this against society at large. So that's primarily what I'd be talking about here in the new book. So we could touch on a lot of those different aspects of things, but was there a particular direction or place you wanted to steer this, Freeman? Or?
Oh man, you just brought up a ton of stuff. Like my brain's like, wow, you know? Yeah, they basically remarketed and rebranded the flu to convince everyone to get in on this. I mean, it was like, oh my God, the flu's going to kill you, as if we haven't gotten sick, you know, and now monkeypox, as if we didn't have chickenpox parties when we were kids and we're all forced in a room together to get the chickenpox together, to get it out of the way. Like the human body couldn't take care of these things, right? We have to turn to these people. So they remarketed the flu, got everybody to, I mean, you had to have been amazed how many people just
willingly laid down their sovereignty, in a sense. People willingly close down their businesses and their livelihoods. And we see the destruction that it's done to the economy here now, as well as other aspects of this. But yeah, primarily, I think when they initially rolled this thing out, they did successfully rebrand the flu into something else. But then, you know, as I get into more detail within the book and stuff, this eventually morphed into something quite different than what it was at the offset here. So we could go over some of that and maybe lay the groundwork for some of the foundational ideas as to how they've leveraged the idea of the archetype or the mythology against us to put this thing into actuation here in reality. Because this falls back on occult principles, and primarily it falls back to the first hermetic principle, the principle of mind or mentalism, where, you know, mind precedes everything and all things stem from human thought, right? So we could shape our reality with our thoughts. So they've leveraged this idea against the masses to create this thing that didn't actually exist back when they rolled this idea out. And this is what they've successfully engineered in our society. They've engineered this whole system wherein they want to tie everything to a digital database. And that's essentially what they want to do, because they're trying to recreate the whole medical model and tie it directly into other aspects of society. Things like your carbon footprint, like I said, your biometric ID, tie it to a social credit score, tied directly to your bank account. So, you know, they could shut you down. They could shut off your access to the system if you don't obey their laws or their restrictions or regulations on you. You won't be able to buy or sell, right? And we've seen this talked about in the Bible, the Mark of the Beast system. That's essentially what's being rolled out here and set up.
Yeah, I mean, I was just talking about how my YouTube channel was taken down, and the most common response is, I'm not surprised. And of course, I wasn't surprised. But this little mental attitude of just allowing it, like, you know, hey, they said that you weren't smart enough to listen to my information and discern truth. So they removed me for your safety, because I'm obviously a bully and an intimidator and all of those things that they called me and accused me of. And, you know, so the mentality of just like, well, yeah, we knew Google would take you down. We knew YouTube would take you down. And it just kind of builds that open mentality of, well, of course they did, you know, and then it's just allowed, right?
Right. And that's a big problem right now, especially with some of the bigger platforms like YouTube. I also have a YouTube channel. I just had to take a video down this morning because of a copyright violation or something stupid like that. They're always looking for any excuse. If you're trying to tell any type of truth on there, for flagging your videos and taking them down or demonetizing your channel or just outright removing your channel. I've known so many. Yeah. Honestly, Freeman, I've barely touched my YouTube channel for over a year. And it's only just the past couple of weeks, because I had people requesting, hey, where you been? You know, because you know how it is. You try to get somebody to switch up their habits and go to somewhere different, mm-hmm. right? Go to a different platform or something. Nobody yep. will do it. They yep. use this same place, YouTube. So they're like, where you been? You haven't been on here for a while. Well, it's like, no, I've been busy, like, you know, posting stuff somewhere where I'm not censored and not taken down and shadow banned and all of the other stuff. So it's like trying to get people to move. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Tell your friends, you know, the free zone is on Spotify. It's on Stitcher. It's on Google. It's on Apple. It's on iTunes. It's on every podcast platform out there. You can use any podcast player to get this show. And yet, yeah, 30,000 people listen on YouTube. 10,000 people listen on the podcast apps. It's, you know, and yes, same thing. As soon as the YouTube channel was gone, they're like, oh, well, Freeman's gone.
That's the thing. It's so hard to change people's habits in that way. And YouTube is the number one most visited website in the world. So it's the real challenge here, trying to steer people from that into other avenues to actually hear some valuable information. Right. So, you know, it's kind of the catch-22 we're caught in. If we want to actually reach the people, we have to try to use these platforms and stuff that they have available. But at the same token, it's mind-numbingly difficult to get people to actually switch up their habits and go elsewhere for that information.
You've gone over to Rockfin, right?
Yes.
I'm on Rockfin as well. So if people subscribe to Rockfin, then they get all of our work.
That's right.
Mine, yours, and everybody else on there. And then we get paid in crypto.
That's right. It's a wonderful thing. It's the best deal out there, honestly, when it comes down to it. For $9.99 a month, you get access to everybody on that platform's premium content, right? So you could subscribe through my channel, through Freeman's channel, whatever. It doesn't matter what channel you subscribe through. You get everybody on the platform's premium content. It's the best deal out there. And there's some fabulous content creators on there. So it's a wonderful thing. I always recommend for people, go on over there, and we're protected over there. Like they won't censor our speech or anything like that. It's, you know, it's what YouTube should have been. And we also get paid, you know, much better than what YouTube pays out for monetization and stuff like that as content creators. So it's worth our while to be there. And it's also a worthwhile price for people to pay to get the best content out there. So it's definitely good. There's a lot on there. Yeah, for sure. And it goes beyond just, you know, stuff like what we talk about. They have all kinds of comedy and stuff on there. They have sports entertainment stuff on there. There's all kinds of things you could look at on Rockfin. It's countless hours of content on there, and people are always putting new material up all the time. So it's worthwhile. It's worth checking out, especially if you're interested in the topics like we're talking about here. There's a lot of people on there that have a lot of different points of view. And that's the real challenge, though, is getting people to switch over and go to a different place from YouTube, because a lot of them, that's the primary place they go to listen to something like this. They'll go to YouTube and then they wonder, hey, why have all these different content creators disappeared off of there? Or why don't they post anything anymore? Well, that's exactly why. We're just tired of being censored and, you know, taken down, and it's just not worth it anymore. So it was only recently I went back on YouTube and started posting some of my stuff again. But I'm getting very disgruntled with it very quickly once again. So I don't know how much longer I'll be using that platform.
Yeah, I do how much longer they'll let you.
Right. That's the other thing. How much longer will they let us, you know? So that's the whole point.
Yes. Go to Rockfin, guys. Check it out. Yep. I've been getting all my videos up there. It's going to take me a long time to get them all up there. 18 years of work. You know, it's going to take some time, but I'm putting them up there and it's getting done. So there's a lot up there now. And, a lot of work up there. And so let's jump to the archetypal forces real quick, because as we're looking at this, and just being that Rockfin also pays in crypto, so the PCR test, right? This the creator of the PCR test came out, said, hey, this does not test for viruses. This doesn't test for that. What it does do is collect DNA, right? So everyone that has been subjected to that nose jab has been giving their DNA over to this system. You talked about a marking system that you know, might be put in the body. And of course, everyone is getting graphene oxide from the vaccinations, along with a few other bizarre ingredients, but one especially, luciferase. So if we're going to talk about archetypal forces in this transhumanist agenda, luciferase is the genetic coding that they put into your DNA, or the DNA of glow-in-the-dark cats and pigs and such, making glow-in-the-dark animals. So all of a sudden, if you have this luciferase written into your DNA, your very, you know, status can show up under black light or even in the dark as you glow. And just keep in mind, as I say often, glow-in-the-dark cats produce glow-in-the-dark cats. These things are passed down genetically, okay? It doesn't just stick with the ones that they've altered. This is, throughout your entire generation of all your family will be, you know, have this in their DNA because of the vaccinations. And then tying this over to the symbolism of cryptocurrency, when you look at, say, Ethereum, which is the typical crypto used for NFTs, and every crypto wallet for Ether starts with the letters OX. And you guys know I have harped on this long, long and hard, because very few people know that the Satanists consider this OX, you know, your Xbox, your X operating system, your, you know, just look for the OX. It's everywhere. It was Brand X with Russell Brand. Just all over the place, you will find this OX symbolism. And that is the mark of the beast, according to Satanists, right? So, you know, if you go to the Satanic Works, if you look into the dark magic, Goetia and give me a second here, Typhonian, the order of Typhon, right? The serpent, the beast, Typhonian magic is where this OX symbolism comes from. So Wayne, this idea of the archetypal dark occult magic staring us in the face, the Demic of Pan, I love that title. Let's get into some of the archetypal forces that you have found that guide people. Like, we can't get them to leave YouTube. These people are using these very archetypal forces to guide people straight into this cage. And I would love to hear what you had found on these archetypal forces used to condition the mind to transhumanism.
All right. Well, let's break down the events of the past 2 years and let's go back to the beginning of this alleged coronavirus pandemic, right? Well, let's take a look here. First and foremost, what happened shortly before this whole thing broke out? Well, they changed the very definition of what constitutes a pandemic. And they did this for a very specific reason, so that this new coronavirus that they were going to introduce to the world would fit the archetype that they needed. Pan, the archetype of Pan, the god, the Greek god of nature, Pan, right? And there's very specific reasons for this. And we'll break that down a little bit more as we go along, because this kind of gets a little a little deep. Let's put it that way. So basically, they changed up the definition of what qualifies as a pandemic just prior to the breaking out of this thing. And then they went ahead and they engineered this whole process into our society. So in order to better understand more about this, we'll go back and we'll look at the rollout of this whole pandemic, where it began and where ostensibly they had changed things around to make it fit the definition they wanted. So when we go back and we look, they used a coronavirus. And once again, this invokes the idea of the power of the sun and the crown, right? That the crowned and conquering child of sorts, as Crowley called it. So it's taking all these ideas, these archetypes, these mythological archetypes, and bringing them forward and putting them forefront into the minds of people, the masses out there. So now what are we talking about when we're talking about archetypes and things of that nature, right? Well, we're talking about different ideas that are encapsulated within mythology as well as other places. And this is something that is very much, how should we say, it's something that's very much admitted by people in the power structure, that they will take these kinds of ideas in order to manipulate the public's perception of reality. They'll use these subjective things like archetypes, mythologies, and different things of that nature in order to do that. And this is acknowledged primarily in a book that I actually put a little excerpt of in the beginning of my book called The Changing Images of Man, where they admit at using these ideas because of their subjective nature to kind of influence the behaviors of the masses.
If I could throw in an example, Star Wars follows the perfect hero cycle for as written out by Joseph Campbell. You have this archetypal hero cycle that has been told throughout all time, and then that is the reason Star Wars was the most popular film ever created at that time, because it wrote to our genetic structure of the hero's cycle. And it could have been any story, but as long as it fit the pattern, the archetype, that's why this movie was just, people couldn't turn away from it. And also exactly. Why Disney bought it and now sells it to you using it for their ends.
Exactly. And Joseph Campbell, the writer of, that work on the hero's journey, he's one of the preeminent mythologists and social engineers of the last decade. Well, not the last decade, the last century, I should say. So that being the case, they've taken a lot of his ideas and run with them. And actually, he was one of the people that helped with some of the ideas that are presented in this book, Changing Images of Man. And I'm going to just read a little excerpt from that for you right here, just so people get the idea. I'm not just saying this, right? They really do admit to using mythology and archetypes and things of that nature to influence behavior. So I'm going to read there. Here's a little excerpt from it. Images and social policy. In this study, we attempt to identify and assess the images of man that are fundamental organizing principles of, number one, our society, and or number two, of key civilizations that have contributed to it. All public and private policy decisions necessarily embody some view or compromise of views about the nature of man, society, and the universe, the kinds of educational systems and goals a society sets up, the ways in which it approaches the problems of material distribution, poverty, and wealth, how it treats the welfare of its citizens, the priorities it gives to various human needs. All these aspects and many more are affected by the image of humankind that dominates the society. Precisely how, we cannot say with detailed accuracy, which is why metaphors, myths, allegories, theories, all of which attempt to express an image, are useful. but in a very real way, all policy issues are issues relating to fundamental assumptions about the nature of man and his concerns. And that's the end of the quote from that book. And that essentially lays it all out, doesn't it? They will use allegories, metaphors, myths, archetypes, various other things to influence human behavior. And the reason being is because the primary function of those people who set up social policy is it's about control, right? It's about steering people. And one of the things that they like to do is quantify everything. They like to make everything measurable in some way. But certain ideas are subjective and not objective. So you can't objectively measure these things. Thus, they need to use something more subjective, like a myth or an archetype, to steer people's behavior in certain ways. So they've come as close as they can with delineating some of these different mythologies or archetypes or things of that nature, and trying to make a quantifiable system in which they could leverage these things against the masses. So that's what they've done here. So although it's a subjective idea, through trial and error and through time, they've discovered, hey, if we could influence people with the archetype represented in this myth or that, then we could get, the designated behavior that we want out of them by affecting their minds in this way. See, it's very subtle. What it is they use the symbols inherent in the myths and stuff like that to affect the unconscious mind of man, right? So your unconscious mind will recognize this because it is a primal thing, the archetype, right? This is the idea of what some in the occult movements would call the Akashic record, or what people in different shamanistic or tribal cultures would call ancestral memory, what they call in modern science, genetic memory or epigenetic memory. It hits upon these ideas in the unconscious mind. So when the unconscious mind recognizes this symbol, it gives a base reaction to the subconscious mind, which will eventually lead to behavior changes in the conscious mind of man. And it will affect their behavior, and they won't realize it. And that's the power of the archetype, and that's the power of what's been done here. And they fully acknowledge this. That book, Changing Images of Man, that was a Stanford Institute study. And Margaret Mead, one of the preeminent cyberneticists of our time, was in on that study, as was Joseph Campbell. So you could understand a lot of these people that whose names come up in think tank groups a lot were involved in this, and they readily admit this is a mechanism that they use to affect people's behaviors and modify their thought forms and things like that. So when we're going into this and I'm talking about this symbol of Pan, this mythology of Pan being implemented in this way, understand that that's exactly what's been done here. And controllers in this world admit to using these types of things to steer society. So that's what I did at the outset of the book. I put that little quote in there from that book just to reinforce the idea, hey, this is not just me saying this. This is something readily admitted by people who constitute these think tank groups, the policymakers, the decision makers. They use these ideas to influence public behavior. And that's essentially what's being done here. Now, we could probably get into more of the specifics about the archetypes that they've leveraged and how they've done so and why they've done this stuff. And that's the important thing here.
Yes. Yes. Please lay it out.
All right. So when we look back and we know there's been a huge amount of pre-planning to this whole coronavirus offset. So we'll go back and we'll look at it's October 18th in 2019, right? The event 201 scenario took place October 18th, 2019, exactly 44 days later. And people who follow numerology and gematria and stuff like that might understand the importance of that number. Exactly 44 days later was the first reported case of this new novel coronavirus on December 1st, 2019. Well, what's gone on and happened since then is they've reestablished what the actual starting timeline of this thing was, right? So they switched it, and I'll get to why they switched it. So the first reported case, and this is still on Johns Hopkins' website, it was reported December 1st, 2019. So what has happened since then is they couldn't directly correlate that, and there were 13 other cases in the interim between December 1st and December 8th, that they couldn't correlate back to the fish market, right? And we all know that that's the whole story that they came up with. It was the wet market at Wuhan where they said this thing came out. And there's a very specific reason that they did this, and they wanted it to be the fish market. And we'll go back and we could demonstrate that they went ahead and they've changed the initial start date of this to December 8th, 2019, stating that the first 14 cases were unrelated now to this initial outbreak. So that being the case, they posthumously, after the fact, after they had released that December 1st was the first case of this, and there were 14 cases before December 8th, that they were calling this new novel coronavirus. They've since retracted that and gone back and now say that the start date of this whole pandemic was December 8th, because that one they could tie directly to the fish market there in Wuhan. So that's what they've done. And you could look this stuff up. This is all out there on various websites. And I actually cite the sources in my book. So Johns Hopkins said December 1st, but then they had now gone back, retracted that, and said December 8th, pretty much everywhere. So that being the case, there's an important reason that they wanted to change the start point of this. And the direct reason for that is because they wanted to tie this to the fish market. And there's a real reason as to why they did this, right? And this has to do with symbolism, once again. And this has to do with a specific type of energy that they were trying to invoke here, which we could get a little bit further into as we kind of move along here, because I think I'll probably have to do a little bit more explaining for people to understand and follow along the long line of thought here. But in order to understand the reasons why, we're going to have to go back and look at the Pan archetype once again, or the mythology surrounding Pan. And in order to do this, we need to go back and we have to look at a story about Pan that was spoken of by Plutarch. And this was a semi-historical account and a mythological account as well. It's actually recorded as being a historical account by Plutarch, and it equates to this mythology. So here's how the story goes from Plutarch. So one day, this ship captain named Themis was sailing his ship around the Isle of Paxi on his way back to Greece. Now, as he was sailing out on the open sea, he heard a disembodied voice call his name from the sea. And he thought he was hearing things, so he ignored it the first time. And little did he realize that everybody else on board the ship heard it as well. So the disembodied voice calls his name again, and this time he answers. The disembodied voice tells him, "Themis, when you get offshore of Greece, you're going to announce that the great god Pan is dead." So he says, okay. So he thinks to himself, he thinks maybe he's a little bit nuts or something, right? Because he hears this disembodied voice, but he doesn't realize that everybody on board the ship heard it as well. So he thinks to himself, okay, here's what I'll do. When I get back just offshore of Greece, if the weather's good, I'll make this announcement to the people on land as I was instructed. But if it's raining and the weather's poor, I won't. So he left this up to the fates, so to say, to determine whether he would make this announcement or not. So as the story goes, he arrives back just offshore of Greece there, and the weather's fair. So he decides, okay, I'm going to follow through. I'm a man of my word. So he loudly announces to everybody on the shore, the great god Pan is dead. And there was a lot of lamenting and crying and stuff like that. So what's the whole point to this story, people might ask, right? Well, this story, this tale that's told by Plutarch, is said to have occurred during the lifetime of Jesus Christ here on earth. So to many of the theologians and Christian scholars and Christian mystics that came about later, this indicated something very clear to them. This indicated the change of an age, right? Because when you look back, Pan, who represented Ares at the time, the great god Pan had died. And this was during the lifetime of Jesus Christ, who is acknowledged as, you know, in the age of Pisces, the fish, right? So this was a crossover point. This created a dynamic, an energy dynamic in the system that represented the changeover or nexus point between two ages. And this was recognized by early Christian theologians and mystics. So this being the case, this created an important point here. Because they understood that because the great god Pan was now dead, and we had the advent of Messiah here in Christ, that this was the announcement of a new age. And this was a crossover point, a nexus point between the two ages of Aries and Pisces. So this was the announcement of the birth of the age of Pisces brought about here. So that's the idea. That's the dynamic at play. And I actually call this, I had to come up with a name for it because I was unfamiliar if anybody else had actually noticed this or done anything with it before. So I call this the Pan-Christ dynamic. And this represents a nexus point or a window of opportunity in the crossover between two ages to institute certain natural energies to shift the age fully into focus. So that's what had gone on at that point. So why are we introducing this story? And what's the point of this whole dynamic? Well, let's go back to the fish market once again. The reason that they wanted to tie the fish market to the pandemic, the Pan-Christ dynamic. See, what they're doing is they're trying to implement this nexus point between two ages, this window of opportunity to shift the social energies of this time. Here's the kicker, okay? Because here's what's going on in a nutshell today. When you look at this from, an astrological point of view, it's argued by many that we're in a state of flux between two ages, the age of Pisces, right? And of course, next in line here would be the age of Aquarius, right? That's what they always say. You always hear the talk in the New Age circles and stuff about the age of Aquarius and stuff like that. And the age of Aquarius is said to be the age of man. So this is the fulfillment of all the things that Christ represented, right? It's the fulfillment. It's the ascension of man to the next level in a spiritual way. So this is what many people would call the Great Awakening. Well, here's what's been done with this whole Pan-Christ dynamic right now. They're playing it in reverse. That's what the dark occultists at the top of the power structure are attempting to do. They're playing it in reverse. See, they're using this nexus point, this energetic point in the crossover between ages to try to leverage something else out of this. So instead of a great awakening, they want what they call the great reset. All right. And the great reset, what this is an attempt to do is it's an attempt to bypass the energetic principles of the age of Aquarius and usurp that and bring about the next age following Aquarius, utilizing the energies of the next age, which would be the age of Capricorn, the goat, once again represented by the Pan archetype, but not just the Pan archetype, the inversion of the Pan archetype, right? Which would be the Baphomet or Baphomet figure. This is the inversion of Pan. Pan had the lower half of a goat and the upper half of a man. When you look at Baphomet or Baphomet, however you want to pronounce it, it has the head of a goat. And we see the goat symbolism all over the place here in society right now. You know, that whole trope, the greatest of all time, the goat, he's the goat. And right down to things like, if you look back at the opening of the Gothard Base Tunnel a few years back, it was all goat symbolism, right? In the ritual and stuff that was performed there. This is what's going on. This is the thing they're trying to do. They're trying to bypass the energetic principle that's associated with Aquarius or the ascension of man, the Great Awakening, and replace it with the energetic principle of the inverse use of the Pan idea. And this invokes the idea of the goat. And what's the goat? Well, a goat is a herd animal, right? So this is an attempt to bypass a spiritual awakening and ground people, so to say, back here in the base material world. So that's essentially what they're trying to do. They're trying to quell this great awakening and turn it into something of a more controlled structure of sorts to try to bring about the changes in people's mentality to that of a herd animal. So that's essentially what they're doing, and they're trying to invoke these archetypes in that way. So that's the basic premise of what I touch upon in the book here. So did you have anything to add, Freeman?
You made me think of the genetic studies that they are doing to herd animals that they say are relating to human, which are, of course, are pigs and goats and cows that they genetically modify to study to find out about humans. So you can tell how they think about us. And you've got the Masons, of course, riding the goat in their rituals. They make postcards of this, of a Mason in his apron riding the goat. And for them, goat meant God of all things, which was intriguing, as they, you know, this was one of their main, because inside of the secret society of Freemasonry, all religions are supposedly inclusive, and therefore you can't use the word Jesus Christ or the name Jesus Christ inside of a lodge, and you must just believe in this supreme being, which they call a goat, right? The God of all things. But it does take 72 years to get 1 degree in the great cycle as we move through this astrological cycle. So it does take a long time for these things to occur as we move through these cycles. And the people that are aware and awake to it, God, you got me thinking, like, what are they putting into AI? I wonder what mythologies and all of that are going into that beast system. But yes, this all rides on the mentalism, the thought forms, the egregors, the you know, even the Masonic rituals being done over and over and over throughout the centuries, always the same, and that same energy being formed inside that same building by men after men after men, just continually do this ritual. These egregor or thought form magic is what absolutely projects the future. And there's been a number of interesting films that show this kind of concept, but yet here we are knowing that everything in front of us has been created out of the mind of man, and everything that we call the real world, that is. And none of it is real, obviously. It's all been manufactured by what our thought forms have guided us to. So to have the power over that and then guide, so, you know, like Klaus Schwab saying, you know, it is us that guide this. You know, we are, God, can you imagine if those guys, oh man, if they win this and they're in charge, Lordy. So yeah, those are the thoughts that came as I'm listening to this, and you are spot on for sure, as this is the methodology of how they are going to shift us to this transhumanist AI controlled future that I believe they've already lost control of, like AI and what's going on. They're already the underlings of their overlord.
Well, that's the thing. It's a prison of their own making, right? That they've built their own personal hell. I've explored that idea in my first book, The Alchemical Tech Revolution. So these are the energetic principles. And if you think of these things like mythologies and stuff like that as nothing more than an energetic principle, or say the cycle of ages as energetic principles, it makes it a little easier to understand what we're talking about here. That's essentially what they've done, is they've been able to identify this crossover point, this nexus point between two ages, and have been trying to manipulate the energies in that nexus point to shift things in a certain way. So that's essentially what I've discovered that they've been trying to do here.
Extremely fascinating. I mean, this, yeah, you definitely spoke to my heart with that whole description of the shift that, you know, yes, I see it.
Yeah. And that's the thing. I mean, it's all around you. And, you know, once you recognize that that's what's going on, you see it everywhere for sure. And I've actually pinpointed down a couple of different events that have happened within, you know, the past 150 years or so, that kind of show that this is pretty much the direction they're going. And I say they're using the inverse of this principle that I call the pan-Christ dynamic here to try to shift the ages backwards in a sense. Because when you look, if you go back to the philosophical roots of much of the astrological aspects of things here, like let's look at right now, we are still supposedly in the age of Pisces, right? Well, this is an age of water, elemental water. Pisces is associated with water. You have your four philosophical elements, fire, water, earth, and air, right? So right now, and if you go back, we could see, if you look at this, Pisces is associated with water. So we're living in a water age, and much of what's transpired in the world throughout this entire age of Pisces is based upon maritime law and maritime concepts, isn't it? And that's by design here. That's the energetic principle of Pisces. Well, essentially, we're supposed to be making the shift to the age of Aquarius here, which is an air age, philosophical air, which represents more spiritual ideas. Because you see, when you look back at the old philosophy, water and earth are primarily equated to material, the material plane, and fire and air are associated with more spiritual things, spiritual aspects. So this is supposed to be an age of spiritual awakening. Whereas these people that are attempting to manipulate these energies, these social energies, so to say, of the age change, they're trying to shift into the Capricorn energetic principles in this. And Capricorn is an age of earth. So earth, that's tied to the material once again. So they're trying to keep man tied to this hyper-materialist viewpoint that we live in. That's why they try to convince people that this is all there is. That's why like atheism and stuff like that is so heavily promoted, and secular humanism. They're trying to convince people this is all there is. Everything that we could experience with our five senses, this is it. And they describe this as consciousness is nothing more than the byproduct of the electrochemical activity of your brainstem. Or at least that's what they want to infer here with what they call quote unquote science, right? They want us to believe that, and they want us to act upon that. And that ties us into this materialist viewpoint, or what I call the hyper-materialist viewpoint. And this is exactly what they need in order to push the transhuman agenda. Because if you're convinced that your consciousness is nothing more than the electrochemical byproduct of your brainstem activity, then that makes it able to be broken down to nothing little more than an algorithm. And if it could be broken down to little more than an algorithm, it could be reproduced in a machine or in a computer. So if that's the case, then they could viably say, hey, you could upload your consciousness into a machine and live forever. See, it creates an artificial paradigm here, a materialist or hyper-materialist paradigm. And that's what they're trying to steer people into. Because, see, those things they could control, right? They're trying to build this completely artificial system that violates natural law principles. And they're trying to steer people into this because this is something they could fully control. This would be something completely and wholly objective that they could measure and quantify and control. And if they could do that, then they could have ultimate power here. They could become the gods of this place. And that's what their ultimate goal is. They want to be God in no uncertain terms. And this offers them that possibility through the use of high technology. They could achieve immortality and total control over everything, right? Or at least this is their viewpoint. This is what they think. And this is why many of them try to steer people into this atheist viewpoint or this materialist viewpoint. And many of the people that work on the science aspects of the transhumanist philosophy and the artificial intelligence and all of that stuff, that's why they do this, because they think this is all there is. And this is their shot at immortality. Now, there are people higher up within the power structure of these dark occultists who run things, as I like to call them, there are people higher up that have more of an understanding of the spiritual aspects and stuff of this, which are heavily disregarded by the vast majority of the transhumanist philosophy. And these ones have more nefarious things in mind with this. And this would be up towards the top of the pecking order here as to what I'm talking about. But by and large, most people that are involved with this push for transhumanism, they're thinking just, you know, solely in the secular humanist viewpoint, in the viewpoint of this is all there is, and we could actually do something. Man can become God. See, it's that whole Luciferian philosophy brought into view once again, the great lie from the Garden of Eden, all of this. And this is why they act upon these things. But I think we'll get a little further into the spiritual ramifications of this stuff as we go later, maybe toward the second hour or something more.
So the ramping up the materialistic side of people's souls, you can see that clearly through videos and, you know, music videos or just whatever is being put out, along with wokeness and its materialistic starts. And then at the same time, bringing about this massive supply chain breakdown where nobody can get cars, you know, and microchips for cars, you can't buy anything. And this whole depletion is just going to hit hard in the next year and more, because it's already hit and we haven't been hit by the wave yet. But, you know, so this heightened materialism, this me, 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 along with this all, and then shutting it off is going to then just make people tumble straight into their trap, wouldn't you think?
Oh, absolutely. What do you think the whole metaverse idea is designed for? See, think of the movie Ready Player One. Life outside in the real world, the quote unquote real world, will be so miserable that people will seek escape into the metaverse, right? Or, you know, whatever this new virtual world that they're going to build is. And this would be the first stepping point towards being able to upload your consciousness into a machine, so to say, like that. So they're going to make it more attractive to actually spend your time in the metaverse than in the real world. So that's one of the dynamics that's going to shift here, because they want to create a whole digital infrastructure, a whole digital world where your consciousness could interact in this whole digital world. This is totally the hyper-materialist viewpoint to get people bought into the strictly physical here. Because what this does is this creates a structure in which these people could maintain power, like absolute power. Right? Because it's at the touch of a button, the flick of a switch. You could be shut off, right? Once your consciousness is fully uploaded into the machine, so to say. This is just the stepping stones towards that. This is a concept I call the Overton window, where they shift your conscious view of what's socially normal or acceptable in small little incremental steps until they have the policy in place that they want. And the policy that they want in the future will be people uploading their consciousness into the machine and so quote unquote escaping the real physical world here and existing solely within the digital realm. And once they have that in place and they normalize this through things like virtual reality, augmented reality, and all these different ideas that are steps towards that, once they have that, then they have absolute full control over this whole thing, over the what they would view as the consciousness of mankind, of the people, right? And I would argue, though, that if you are able to equate your consciousness to an algorithm and upload it into a machine, is that really fundamentally you? I don't think it is. There's no spirit to that. There's no animus there. So that being the case, this is something completely artificial that doesn't belong in this reality. And this is a concept that Michael Hoffman refers to as the reign of dead matter. And I could not think of a more apt description of what this is. It's the reign of dead matter. It's all about death, right? It's the cult of death that runs things in this world. It's all about dead entities, essentially, right? What are corporations? Corporations, by definition, are dead entities. And this goes back to the whole straw man idea in law and stuff like that as well. This is what they're trying to build. It's the reign of dead matter. It's all about dead entities. And that's the whole goal of transhumanism, so to say. So it's the creation of this thing that mimics mankind, but has no spirit or animus to it. And the reason for that, well, we could debate about that a little later. That goes back to the spiritual concerns of things. Michael Hoffman calls it. He calls it the reign of dead matter. And that is a very apt description of this Absolutely. Whole system. So, Go ahead. I think you have some thoughts to add.
I do, as we're wrapping up this first hour. Strangely enough, I've been putting up my old Oracle shows from 2008. Every Wednesday, guys, if you're not checking it out, that's there on freemantv.com and also on the free stream for the Free Zone Archives. You get all of these Oracle shows. I'm editing, remastering, getting the commercials out, doing what I can. But I just put out January 6th from 2008, and I ended up titling it Necromancy because, this was exactly what we were talking about here, was the magic of the dead. And it's amazing how long this story has been with us and how much data we have to really express all this. So I found it fascinating that this just completely tied in. Actually, it's going to air, it just aired Wednesday. So we're on this target. We're bringing this information out. I want out of the World Wide Web like nobody. You know, I really would just love to shut down everything and just live my life, go out to my garden, meet my friends, hang out with my neighbors, make dinner. You know, this is the life that I would choose, you know, family, friends, community, gardens, love, life, all of that, even travel, exploration, and throw all that in there. But, you know, if I could, I would shut down this World Wide Web in my house, like in a heartbeat. But I know I can't, because I'm on a mission. I'm on a mission to shift this whole thing so that we all can go live in our garden, have our family, friends, and community together. And to awaken humanity, we've got this opportunity of global communication, which has never been offered to mankind until now. So we're using their tools against them. And that's the best thing that we could do. So help me out, help Wayne McCroy out, and start this shift, folks, into our next age of spiritual enlightenment, of awakening, and all of the good things that humanity really is. And let us shut down this damn network and not have to come out here and talk to you ever again. Just run into you in the garden and say hi. So that's my hope. So, folks, you can find Wayne McCroy and myself on Rockfin. And, of course, we get paid in that horrible Bitcoin. No, we don't get Bitcoin, but in cryptocurrencies, which, of course, you know, the thing is, you've got to have feet in both sides of this world. There's just no way about it. Wayne, I've mentioned it numerous times on my show, but I actually bought a metaverse. It's my own personal metaverse. It's whatever I want to do with it. But I feel that we have to have feet in both systems here. If we're going to communicate with humanity, if we're going to try and awaken them, we need to have our YouTube channels. We need to have our podcast channels. And yeah, I'm going to have a metaverse because I want to be able to reach those people as well. So here we are at this crossroads. And, you know, will you choose death? Or will you choose life? And that's where we're at. So hopefully everyone will go over, and most of your books, all of your books are basically just Amazon is where we would get those, right? Again, using their tools against them.
Yeah, they're available on Amazon, or you could get them pretty much anywhere else that sells books at this point. But nice. Yeah, that's primarily where it would go through. I do agree with you wholeheartedly. We do need to use these tools that they've set up against them, because I don't think they really had that in mind when they were trying to set up all these systems. Uh-huh. So that's the thing. We need to use their platforms that they make available to us against them while we still have the opportunity to. And that's why I still do the things I do. I use these tools that they've made available because, you know, this is a good thing we're doing. I think there's no nobler cause than trying to wake people up to these ideas and make them aware of what's been done to their sovereignty and free will.
And we are
in this world. Right. And we're making an effect. And I definitely am optimistic that we can turn this whole thing around yet.
And I get angry hate mail when I bring up Mercury retrograde. But, you know, I got to bring it up because, you know, we're talking about astrological cycles here. And a lot of people don't really believe in or understand me either. Right. I don't know these cycles. I don't know Chiron. I don't know how things work. I know certain major influences, and I know that I'm a Cancer through and through. I mean, it's just crazy if I read any of those. But just last week or whenever it happened, I think it was last week, maybe 2 weeks, I was at the grocery store, and as I watched the chaos going on behind the deli counter, I saw certain signs and symbols that triggered my brain, like, oh, look, that happened, this happened, that happened. This is Mercury retrograde. And I told the lady at the counter, of course, she had no idea what I was talking about. I was like, man, I guarantee you Mercury is retrograde. And, you know, she's just like, yeah, whatever. And so I went home and I Googled it. And sure enough, that day Mercury retrograde started. So I couldn't help but feel like, God, if I really knew this stuff, if I knew more about because Mercury retrograde is just one that I happen to notice. If I knew the signs and symbols of all these other things, what could I, what could I do? What choices would I make if I was aware of all of this knowledge? And there's no way they don't have an AI working on this, right?
Right. I see that all the time too, things like that. And here's the thing. Okay. So people could kind of understand what we're talking about. A lot of people, we've been conditioned as a society here in Western culture to kind of belittle the idea of astrology, or you know, these ideas of different energies are inherent with the cycle in the sky, or the stars, with you know, that we're in sync with the sky clock, so to say. So the idea of the sky clock is an important thing, and these are actually inherent natural energies that can be manipulated and used at times, or leveraged on at times, if you understand how they operate and what to look for. And there are people in positions of power in this world that very much understand, much better than you and I do, aspects of this and how this works and how to utilize these energies. That's why they always time their rituals the ways that they do. It's all based upon the sky clock, so to say. It's all based on these ideas, because there's a natural energetic principle involved that they understand better than we do. And this is a real thing. And that's why, you know, the astronomers and astrologers of old have put these ideas together and, you know, set up this whole zodiac system to try to describe these natural energies. And that's the thing, we get lost in a lot of that type of idea in our modern culture, because we were taught to think of that as being nonsensical, or backward superstition, or things of that nature.
But we're materialist, you know, not spiritualist, right?
Right. But see, the thing you need to understand is there's people in positions of power in this world that wholeheartedly believe and understand a lot of these principles and will use them against us. And the things that they do to act upon these beliefs that they have and these energies that they are aware of will affect all of us. That's why it's important to understand and study these things. So whether you believe it or not, it's still important to understand it, because there's people in positions of power in this world that do understand it and will try to use it against you. So if you know what their motivation is and what it is they're trying to invoke against you, then you could better understand how to counter that. And that's an important thing here to understand. And that's the bottom line.
Absolutely. So folks, get the Demic of Pan. Check this out. Why, all the archetypal forces that have led up to this very mindset, leading us into this death cult, and that is apparent, obvious, and everywhere around us. And so let's give some love to Steve Mercer, the associate producer here at freemantv.com, for keeping the ball rolling here. Thank you, Steve. I could not do it without you, no doubt about it. And you can write Steve, producer Steve, at freemantv.com to give any show ideas that you want to do, or just send him some love for doing what he does. And Freeman at freemantv.com. Also, you can write me and just tell me what anything you'd like. And you follow me on Twitter at freemantv, my last bastion of social networking. But of course, Rockfin, you can find both Wayne McCroy and myself, along with Sam Tripoli, Jason Burmes, and a whole host of other people. 777 Crow, all of them are there on Rockfin for one low fee. You get everybody. And that helps out everyone involved, because we need your support to keep ourselves on to this horrible beast system, so that we can continue to be globally communicative and talk to the world in this type one civilization, as we quickly become coming in on the singularity. We want it to be a spiritual singularity, not a materialist dead world that they want to design for us. So we want to keep talking. So please come over to freemantv.com and subscribe, and please share the word. Tell everyone, just put the free zone on any podcast player out there and you'll find the show, and you get all this bonus information I'm giving out now with all the old Oracle shows and all of the other stuff that's there. 18 years of work. Please come over and share it. Check it all out. There is no such thing as an old show. So thank you all, and we will see you